Bitcoin.
All right, that should be good. We should be able to sync up there. All right. I'm in Miami. You're in Hong Kong. I'm at a shitcoin conference. Do you want to talk about Hong Kong? Do you want people to know that you're?
Well, we're talking about it right now. Aren't we recording? We're live.
We are live. But what's up, freaks? Welcome to this week's edition. Welcome to this week's edition of Rabbit Hole Recap, brought to you by our friends at BlockFi.com. You know all about them. If you're looking to hold on to your Bitcoin, Ether, or Litecoin, I do not like the latter two of those three options. You can go to BlockFi, take out a collateralized loan using your Bitcoin, so you do not have to sell. It's going to be very, very imperative in this upcoming tax season. If the tax season actually comes to fruition, if the government opens up again, BlockFi is the place to go, to BlockFi.com/TalesFromTheCrypt. You freaks are getting a special deal. You've already heard about it. Check it out. Check out crypto collateralized loans if you get a chance, if you're looking to hold on to your Bitcoin. Matt, what the hell's going on in Hong Kong? What time is it there?
Everyone's wondering why Rabbit Hole Recap's late. It's because you're in Miami and I'm in Hong Kong. Fucking 13-hour difference over here. It is 10:52 in Hong Kong.
It's 9:52 a.m. in Miami.
I am looking across Victoria Harbor. There's a huge AXA ad, and I'm just wondering if it's part of the conspiracy.
Have you seen Adam back? Has he been walking around?
He probably maintains the advertisement. I'm not sure about that though.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to be careful, freaks. There's some lizard people controlling Bitcoin. AXA is there?
There's no
headquarters.
There's no Bilderberg ad though, just an AXA ad.
Yeah, they try to be discreet with it. They don't want to put it all on your face at once.
It's the way to do it.
Matt, question for you: how is the water pressure in your hotel room?
Oh, the water pressure is fantastic. They really do not care about the environment here.
Yeah, I wish I could say the same about this hotel in Miami. Really disappointing flush pressure and shower pressure. That's one thing I look for in a hotel. First time you go in, you gotta check out the water pressure. I'm happy that you have some quality water pressure over there in Hong Kong.
Yeah, I have a rainhead shower. It's a pretty fantastic shower, actually.
Sounds pretty dope. Do you want to tell the freaks why you're over there? I think it's a pretty cool story. Or would you rather not?
My great grandfather built the. I guess to start, I mean, my family was back in the 30s and the 40s, where they were quite loaded. French money from Alsace-Lorraine, and they moved to Hong Kong, and the Japanese took everything, and they put them in internment camps. And so after the war in 1952, my great-grandfather built the first real theater in Hong Kong. He brought the Beatles over, a bunch of big acts, and it was supposed to be his big comeback. Ended up selling in 1957, and now they're thinking of either knocking down the theater and building a new development, or building a development around the theater and renovating it. So they're interviewing my grandmother for a documentary, and they flew her out here, and I'm escorting her. It's pretty fucking cool. It's like we have a family historian. He's done so much research on all this shit.
Really? Yeah, it seems pretty dope. It's when you first told me, I was. It's a very interesting story. And it explains a lot of why you're into Bitcoin. I never knew that before a couple of weeks ago.
We went to their home, their old home. It's still there. It's owned by the University of Hong Kong, and they have a Cantonese pop singer, this really famous pop singer that sings, you know, in Hong Kong. He rents the place now. He completely renovated it and tried to bring it back to it. He like did Universal Records is his label. He like did co-production with Rihanna and shit. He's like a big deal. He brought us into his home. Well, it was like our old home, I guess. And it was a really fun time, really interesting, really tiring, but interesting and exciting.
How's it feel to get reconnected with your roots? What kind of feelings are you feeling right now?
I wish my great grandfather hodled that theater, man. It's probably it's probably worth like 400 mil now or something like that. He died poor.
Well, you're doing a good job of rebuilding the family name, I would say.
I like to think it.
Yeah.
How's the shitcoin conference going? The shitcoin conference. It's like the number one shitcoin conference of the world. It's where Ethereum was launched in 2014 in a back room.
It's true. The North American Bitcoin Conference. I'm in Miami. That's what I'm here for. I have not ventured down to the conference yet. I got here last night. Met up with some people I work with. We got dinner and then actually met with a couple of the guys from Unchained Capital from West Texas last night. So I have not run into any shitcoiners yet. My experience up to this point has been pleasant. I'm not sure how well that'll go. I'm going to go down there after we record this and I post it. And we'll see what's happening. And we'll talk about it next week when we're in person again.
Yeah, I've never been. I'm pretty excited to hear how it goes. I know. I remember last year they really outdid themselves. It was pretty. It was right at the top of the market, especially the altcoin market. I remember.
Yeah, apparently,
what was it like the Dash strip club controversy?
Apparently, it wasn't a strip club. There's a lot of misinformation around this, but Dash did throw a banger that had promiscuous dancers at it.
In Dash's defense, and I would never defend Dash, even though I'm about to do it. I mean, I think it was Dash sponsored it, but TNABC, they were running
organizing,
right?
Yeah.
It was like an official after party.
Yeah.
And then I remember WAN Chain got launched there last year. I had a buddy who tried to shill that to me.
Am I about to go see like shitcoins being launched downstairs?
Yeah, I mean they're gonna have tons and tons of shitcoin presentations for you if it's anything like last year. I remember I watched a live stream.
Ugh, sounds terrible.
You're gonna love it.
Probably won't. Yeah, I am actually. I'm looking forward to it. I think Chris DeRose and John Seth are here. I would like to seek them out. Some podcaster Bitcoin podcaster OGs. Talk to them. Pick their brains. See if DeRose tries to confront Bitcoin maximalism in person. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, like all these other conferences, the best part isn't the conference, right? The best part is all the people that come down and you get to network outside of it, see a bunch of people that you only know online. So that should be
fun. Yeah.
And I know you have some good interviews lined up, so I'm excited to listen to those.
I do. I did some interview prepping last night, and we're going to have a good conversation. I picked up a new guest down here, too.
Fucking badass. I'm excited, Marty. Keep hustling.
Thanks, bro. You too. Speaking of hustling, thanks for the segue. Let's hustle into these topics we got lined up. What do you want to start with? Been a pretty crazy week. We got a lot of big news. Shitcoin launch. I won't call it a shitcoin. An altcoin launch. A delay in another hard fork in Ethereum. BitMEX new ICO research. What do you want to jump into first?
At Constantinople, is Istanbul now, right? Is that what we're saying?
I think Constantinople, Istanbul, whatever you want to call it. It seems like
A big deal. I think that's the biggest deal, right?
Yeah, yeah. So let's jump into this. So for you freaks that don't know or are not aware, yesterday, I believe, the 16th, Ethereum was scheduled to hard fork, basically the first step on their transition in a long journey to proof of stake would be this Constantinople hard fork, which would cut the emissions, the third inning. They had some terrible, we talked about the third inning last week. They had some terrible marketing around that. They're going to cut the block reward from 3 Ether per block to 2 Ether per block, as well as some other upgrades to make the system more efficient. A couple days before the scheduled hard fork, a security team found a future potential vulnerability in the forked version of Constantinople. So if they were to fork over to Constantinople, the way Ethereum is structured in the code, specifically with the gas limits and certain types of contracts, an attacker would be able to exploit certain smart contracts on Ethereum in this new version of Ethereum via the Constantinople hard fork. So the security team called it out, and they, in within 6 hours, they delayed the hard fork, which is, I'm curious to see how they did that.
Yeah, I mean, in a very bad way, right? The exploit, you could have drained funds. People could have lost a bunch of money, which is like worst case scenario.
Similar to the DAO hack.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty scary for Ethereum stakeholders. I think it's a great example of why hard forks should be avoided at all costs rather than doing the exact opposite, which is what Ethereum has been doing, which is trying to do as many hard forks as possible, it seems like.
I think Monero's got to beat there.
What was that? Monero? Yeah, well, Monero's got like that 6 month automatic, let's hard fork every 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
It's not great either. Same idea. Yeah. I mean, that's, I don't know what to say except for the fact that, you know, good for them that they caught that in time. That could have been really bad. As far as people worrying about whether or not all the nodes were going to upgrade before the hard fork or whether all the nodes could downgrade before the hard fork once they found out it was vulnerable, that's not really that much of a problem because their nodes are extremely centralized. So all you have to do is send Infura an email and they'll make sure that it's handled. You know, the key is when you do these hard forks is all the old clients don't matter anymore. So, for instance, when we had the recent Bitcoin bug, which is what all the Ethereum people are going to counter our discussion here today with, the inflation bug, the older clients would have immediately realized that there was an issue. But with hard forks, the older clients don't matter anymore, so they're not involved in the process. So you can have these really sticky situations. It's really like worst case scenario situations because you structure it in such a way that you're doing hard forks all the time. And this is just a perfect example of why you should avoid those at all costs. And then we've already discussed multiple times about how you just willy-nilly switching mining rewards and shit. It's just a horrible idea. Because miners have long-term investments they have to deal with, right?
Yeah. No, it's I think it's a harsh lesson in the reality of the nature of these blockchains and in the externalities that exist. Like if they were about to hard fork and they didn't even catch that bug until 6 hours before, like imagine what they haven't caught. Like imagine what does exist, like what 0 days exist somewhere else in the code that somebody hasn't got their eyes on.
And like, again, who the fuck was the security team, right? No one ever heard of them before.
Right?
I never heard of
them.
Came
out of nowhere. No, I never heard of them either.
So like, good thing these guys posted a Medium post on it, right? This wasn't like the core dev consensus or whatever, the 10 guys in a room with Lubin deciding. This was just some randos looked into it and they were like, guys, you missed this.
Yeah.
So.
You missed this. Pretty big miss.
And then the other thing is you have the difficulty bomb, which is designed to force these hard forks, right? So now the difficulty bomb started ticking, I think. So now they're like, they're like,
blocks are slower.
Yeah.
They forgot to hit snooze again, bro.
This was supposed to be the snooze button. So now they're like rushing out a new hard fork. They got to get the hard fork out, right? Like whether or not they do a full Istanbul hard fork or if they do just a snooze button hard fork. They have to do a hard fork. And they put themselves in this situation. They think that's a feature, but it's really a bug.
Yeah. And the scheduled new hard fork is next Monday, correct?
Yeah, it's coming up. Well, I mean, I guess because of time travel, it's going to happen. Does it happen on Tuesday for me or does it happen on Sunday? I'm not sure. I'm like so confused at this 13 hours. But it's going to happen. So we'll see how that plays out. That should be interesting.
Yeah, and let's jump into like, is Ethereum decentralized? Like, how are they able to make this decision in such haste? How was the network able to coordinate in such a hasty way? Like, again, like, you're over in Hong Kong. What if you fucking had a fully updated node ready for the Constantinople fork? You fell asleep and woke up after the fork was supposed to happen and realized you were on the wrong chain.
I mean, it's not like I'm going to bring my node with me to... definitely not an Ethereum node like this. I can't bring that to Hong Kong with me. Yeah. I mean, like we said, Infura just handles that for them. That's
true.
I think this is a kind of an emperor has no clothes moment. Obviously, it's not very decentralized, if at all.
Yeah, and I'm a contrarian in the sense, not a contrarian in the sense that I don't like Ethereum or think it's a shittily designed protocol. I'm contrarian in the belief that I don't think it's going to be around as long as people think. Like, people think it's going to be around for years. I think these critical mistakes they're making are going to sort of swiftly help people come to the realization that this is not the most advantageous way to build these decentralized protocols. I think I'm giving Ethereum a less than 3-year lifespan into the future.
I mean, it depends what you call dead, right? Like, if it turns into like a Ripple-esque network that's like pretty centralized, is it dead?
The goal of becoming a decentralized world computer run on a proof of stake consensus protocol, I don't think that will ever come to fruition.
Well, so this is a good segue. James Prestwich released his ETH 2.0
What to expect overview, when Ethereum is expecting.
Yeah, great name. Yeah, that's a really good title.
Yeah, so let's jump into this. ETH 2.0. If you freaks haven't seen it, we'll put the link in the show notes. James Prestwich works at Suma, correct? Suma One?
Yes.
Which is, and he's very involved with writing smart contracts on Ethereum and is probably one of the most respected Solidity devs or Ethereum devs in the world. Am I correct in assuming that?
I mean, he's definitely one of the most respected Ethereum critics from the Ethereum camp themselves, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but he's also working on it. So he's not just a critic. He's also got skin in the game.
Oh, absolutely. And yeah.
Yes. And so he came out with what to expect when Ethereum's expecting, basically laying out their plans to transition to proof stake over what seems to be a 10-year period. And there's a lot of empty holes that need to be filled within that plan. So the only two phases they have pretty much fleshed out of a 7-phase rollout, or 1 and 2, correct? And then parts of 3?
Yeah, I mean, it's all just crazy, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, so the future of Ethereum, like, they're creating a whole new token. It's going to be called Beacon ETH. Like, you'll be able to get what's called Beth.
It's a whole new chain.
Yeah, it's a whole new chain. They're completely giving up on the chain that they started with. And so you're basically, it might be after the Constantinople hard fork or one of the other planned future ones in the near future, in the next 1 to 2 years, you'll be able to buy what is essentially a call option on the future potential Ethereum network in the form of a Beth token.
And like the tokens and the smart contracts don't transfer over easily.
Yeah, the smart contract languages are not the same, but apparently they're trying to make them compatible. It just seems like, again, it's they're trying to figure this out on the go, and I do not think they will be able to figure out in the long run.
I mean, it comes back to the same thing with the Constantinople bug. Like, you need everything with these systems should be as simple as possible, right? When you add complexity, you make it way more likely that you'll have bugs in your hard forks. And it seems like their ETH 2.0 plan is trying to add as much complexity as possible rather than try and simplify their already complex bullshit, right? And that's the main issue. Like, to simplify the argument is that it's not simple enough.
Right? And I don't know. Sometimes I feel like I'm taking crazy pills, man. Like, how does anybody have, like, how can anybody put any credence into this project? They have not delivered on any, I don't know. I'm not going to. Who cares?
We don't even know what the block reward is going to be in a year.
Right?
Like, let alone. That's why we kind of touched on this last episode a little bit. And I was like, how can we even speculate on what's going to happen with ETH 2.0? We don't even know what's happening with ETH 1.0. So it's just.
Right.
I mean, investors don't like this. Miners are investors as well. They don't like this. I think stakeholders in general shouldn't like this. And hopefully the market will start to come to terms and realize this. But we'll see.
Man. Are the powers of decentralized finance strong enough to will it into existence?
I mean, I'm less optimistic than you in terms of ETH dying. Like, I think this, you know, it can last like a long time. Like, look at Ethereum Classic. Ethereum Classic is a dead chain.
We consider that dead.
It was. So we were talking about whether or not it was an Eclipse attack or a reorged full chain wide. Like a true reorg, and it ended up being a true reorg for ETC. Like, both Gate and Yobit were attacked. They finally admitted to it. So it wasn't just Coinbase getting their nodes surrounded like a lot of people speculated originally. So, like, that chain is fucking worthless. Like, it's not secure. And what? It's only down 20%. I think I looked and I saw that Grayscale, you know, Barry Silbert's investment trust, they have like $25 million worth of ETC under management. Like, that's crazy. Like, absolutely crazy. Right? They sent out emails to all their people. They were like, don't worry, like, our specific funds aren't at risk. Yeah, okay, because you're not sending them around, so they can't get reorged. Like, ridiculous. Absolutely. So, like, Ethereum could last for a very long time. Like, these things don't die so quickly. But
I don't know, Matthew. Long term, I just have a feeling.
Who the fuck knows?
I have a feeling. I don't know. Yeah, we'll see. So that happened. Planned next hard fork next week. We'll follow that. My Twitter thread that I started in August of 2017 is aging like a fine wine, which is great to see.
Oh, that thread. Great.
Yeah.
Okay, so we just did 15 minutes of shitting on Ethereum. I think that's a that's a fair amount of time, considering this is an hour long pod. But we're gonna have to shit on it a little bit more. BitMEX released their new ICO research. What'd they say? 25 billion worth of tokens at the peak were allocated to ICO teams themselves.
Yeah, so something like crazy like that.
The ICO teams, they double dip, right? They sell you the tokens that they pre-mined for Ethereum, and they automatically cash those out. And then they also allocate themselves their own tokens that they can cash out over time. And that's just, it's just blatant money grab. They just, the whole use case of ICOs, 99% of ICOs, the whole point was just to take your money. And that's me being fair by saying 99%. It's higher than that.
And you're talking like overtly just like launch a token and cash out pretty immediately. Like, that's what the BitMEX research proved.
Well, correct? Actually, a lot of them didn't sell their tokens. They're worth like $5 billion now or something because they were illiquid. Yeah. It was like hard for them to dump them. But $5 billion too much still, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Ethereum enabled all this shit. They prioritized tokens. They launched an ICO themselves. They set the model. And Vitalik and co. advised and funded a shit ton of these ICOs projects. So, like, this is the house they built.
Yeah.
And people shouldn't forget that. Remember that, people. Fucking don't let them get away with it.
Exactly, but they're proud of it. It's crazy. It's like, maybe we're wrong. That's what makes me like question. Like, people are proud of it. They're excited about it. It seems to me ethically dubious, but I don't know. We're done shitting on it.
I mean,
let's talk about.
You can say all you want about Bitcoiners, but at least we didn't fucking do that. You know, that's like, how can any of them ever talk shit about Bitcoiners when they literally just stole a shit ton of people's money? just with false promises and absolute bullshit. Like, fucking ridiculous, man. It just, people should be mad as hell. It makes me so angry. I mean, I didn't get fucking ripped on that because I knew better, but so many people did, and that's a shame.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And it will happen again. Just be aware. That's why we do this show, is to help highlight these perceived ethically dubious actions in this space. Again, this is our take. This is my take. This is the rabbit hole recap. This is what we think. I believe it pretty strongly. We'll see how time treats us and the ICO launchers. Speaking of coin launches, though, a lot of scuttlebutt going on crypto Twitter. We had one this week, and it's actually probably a good juxtaposition of the previous topic, because some will argue this is like, if you were going to launch an altcoin in today's day and age and want it to be seemingly as fair as possible, the way Grin did it is probably the fairest way. But that doesn't mean Grin is legitimate. We'll get into that. Matt, what do you think about the Grin launch?
Wait, Grin launch this week?
Yeah, you didn't hear that, dude?
It's this has got to be the most hyped launch we've had since Zcash. Everyone's talking about it on Twitter, even so-called at least people who have been accused of being Bitcoin maxis for a while are all chilling it at this point.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, so yeah, it's yeah, the Bitcoin community is split in half. Let's talk about it. Was the launch fair in your mind?
I am very happy about the Grin launch because I think that the whole ICO bullshit that Ethereum created really corrupted the whole space. Before that, all the launches were POW launches without pre-mines. Otherwise, they were labeled a scam. So it's nice to come back to those roots. It's not a panacea. Like, we'll never have the immaculate conception that Bitcoin had. You love talking about the immaculate conception. You know, no one knew Bitcoin was going to have value when it originally launched. So there'll never be a launch as fair as Bitcoin. But it's definitely a huge improvement over the ICO method, right? And it's good to see that we've come back to that.
It's true. Yeah, definitely. If you're on a scale from fair to unethical, I think Grin's launch is definitely trending far into the fair launch side of it. But let's get into it. So, like, I wrote about it in the Bent this morning. Shout out me. I'm going to pat myself on the back. Number 400 went out this morning.
Congrats.
But yeah, like, thanks, dude. Appreciate it. Again, like, every altcoin since Namecoin has been trying to produce serendipity, the serendipity that Bitcoin was created in, or the serendipitous moment that Bitcoin was created in. And again, I'm going to get poetic and somewhat just like romantic here, but I do think there's a romanticism around Bitcoin's launch that cannot be replicated and is essential to the long-term success of decentralized money. I don't call me a Bitcoin maximalist, call me irrational. I do have a sort of romantic relationship with this stuff, and I do think narratives and stories are important, and I just don't think anybody's going to be able to replicate the serendipitous moment that Bitcoin was incepted in. Am I wrong in thinking that, Matt?
No, I mean, I completely agree. I mean, I don't think altcoins are a threat to Bitcoin, so I'm happy to see a better altcoin, right?
That's true.
It's new, novel privacy technology. I think privacy is very important. I think Grin is a very crowded trade. What some people were saying, that over $100 million worth of VC capital was poured into mining operations to go into it in the beginning. You have a very similar situation as with Zcash, where they have a horrible monetary policy, and the way they set it up was, it's really hard to mine in the beginning to try and simulate a fairer launch. So it creates this weird situation where these VCs are pouring a ton of money in and they're not really doing any profit calculations. They're just saying, fuck it, you know, let's throw a ton of money at this thing. So it's probably not going to be a good investment for them. They'll probably get wrecked on it, at least in the beginning. That's what happened with Zcash. I don't know if you remember with Zcash. The price skyrocketed like right in the beginning and then just collapsed. But
yeah, is that what it'll be,
you know, if we're going to have future, if we're going to have future Mimblewimble side chains or something, like we need them to test this shit out for us so we can see how we're going to do it. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let them go to town. I agree. I'm not mining Grin. You're not mining Grin, but let's,
I'm not
going to completely ignore it. I'm going to watch how this shit unfolds, and I think Bitcoin will be improved because of it. Bitcoin will become stronger and better because of it.
Yeah, and so let's talk about how Mimblewimble can potentially be added to Bitcoin. The consensus, or I don't know if there's even consensus around it, but I think a lot of the strong opinions agree that it would have to be done via federated sidechain. Is that correct? Uh-oh. I lost Matt. Signal's reconnecting. Maybe he's talking on his end, too. Uh-oh. Waiting. We're at minute 31:50. Yo.
Are we back?
Yeah, we're back. I'll just cut that part out.
Okay, sorry about that, freaks. We're back.
Yeah, we're back. The connection caught. Remote pods. That's why I like to do it in person. Never have these hiccups. What were we talking about?
Freaks.
Oh, we were talking about... Oh, yeah. I was positing how Mimblewimble would be implemented into Bitcoin potentially at some point in the future. And am I right in saying that the strong opinion, or the strongest opinion, is via federated sidechain?
Right. That's the easiest. And federated sidechain is the easiest.
Okay. And can you describe the trade-offs of implementing Mimblewimble at the protocol level? I can't, with any virility and argument, make the case right now.
The main overview, right, is that it's really hard to audit the supply, right? It's the same argument we have. There's two main arguments. It's hard to audit the supply, and the tech is brand fucking new. We haven't really tested it. It's not battle tested.
And it fucks up scripting too, right?
What was that?
It fucks up the scripting language too.
Oh, yeah, there's no scripting, so we can't do Lightning Network and shit. We can't do multi-sig, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, so that's a major issue. The other thing is Grin's monetary policy is really shitty. It just inflates constantly. I think, is it like 400% inflation for the first year or something crazy?
Yeah, 400% and then 100% the next year. It's producing a Grin every 60 seconds, correct?
Yeah, so the other option is like if you make it... Actually, I'm not even sure if you could do it with, since it doesn't have scripting language, I'm not even sure if you could do it. But the other option is if we can make it so you could easily switch between Bitcoin and Grin, you could just use it as like a mixer with a shitty utility token, right? And then you get the benefit. You go into Grin, you clean your coins, and then you go back into Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. But either way, yeah, it's a good test. People shouldn't go crazy about it. It's like probably the most crowded trade of the year. and let's see how it plays out. Let's watch how it plays out, and we'll figure out how to go from here. It's been launched for what, like 2 days? Launched. Beam is the other Mimblewimble, major Mimblewimble implementation, and they have like a Zcash style founder's reward. And what, they had like a major ass bug in their client.
Yeah, but there's also like three. There's like three beams. So was that the one you're referring to?
Well, the beam, definitely the beam I'm referring to is the Mimblewimble beam. Yeah, people like that name. It's a good name. It's four letters. So let's just see how this shit plays out. There's no reason to get your panties in a bunch. It's not going to take down Bitcoin.
I'm not worried about that at all.
Yeah, so let's just watch it play out. I don't think it's a threat to Bitcoin. It's a threat to the people who speculate on it. And let's see how these VCs handle. Oh, and the other issue I have with Grin is that they're trying this whole ASIC resistance bullshit again. And there's no such thing as ASIC resistance. That's not real. And you want ASICs anyway, so you should be trying to get ASICs as quick as possible, not delaying that, because if you're not the dominant GPU chain, then you're never truly secure. So they have that issue as well.
That is true. That is true. Good observation. Next
enough
topic.
Enough about Grin. Yeah. I'm sick of it already.
We'll be watching. We'll keep you freaks abreast at the rolling out of Grin and how it performs in the market. Lightning Network analysis by the block. Very interesting. Coming at the assumption that there are centralized hubs. Basically proved that Lightning Network is getting more decentralized over time, too. I believe 6 months ago, the top 10 nodes held 58% of the funds held in channels. And since then, since July or June, I believe it's fallen to 38%. So 35%. I'm messing up the percentages. I'm in the ballpark in that area. Considerable decrease in the centralization of the top 10 Lightning Network wallets. But there was also other analysis. There's one big channel producer in particular. I forget the name off the top of my head. They're sort of
LN Big. It's LNBig.com.
Yeah. LNBig.com.
Which is like an anonymous, like, black market type dude.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is kind of badass.
Yeah. What you put this in the topic list, what in particular did you want to touch on?
I mean, of course it's going to start centralized. Like, it's beating all of our expectations. The capacity keeps going up. Yeah, it looks like Ellen Big has 64% of Lightning Network's capacity. That is not ideal. No one wants, you know, one entity to be, you know, responsible for over half of Lightning Network's capacity. But at the same time, like, if you asked me a year ago if our capacity was going to be this high, I would have said that probably wouldn't be the case. So it's pretty impressive how fast Lightning Network is growing. And as we have more people, as it becomes easier for people to run their nodes and buy hardware nodes and use Pierre's launcher and run it on their computer, you're going to see this spread out. And this is just the bootstrapping phase. And the beauty of scaling with a layer 2 network is Lightning could completely fail, which doesn't seem like that's going to be the case, but it could completely fail and Bitcoin will be unaffected. And then we continue on. You know, we try again. And that's the beauty of layer 2, that a lot of people, a lot of the Lightning Network skeptics tend to conveniently ignore, right?
Yeah. A lot of people don't appreciate that. They feel like it's the Lightning Network, just from a prima facie stance, is sort of a centralizing point of failure in Bitcoin and or not really Bitcoin. I do not find those arguments to be convincing, but there are people that believe that. And like you said, I think experimenting on these things on layer 2 is imperative, and probably the most advantageous way to attempt to scale these systems. So Lightning Network, if you're not running a node yet, try it. It's been fun. I've been having a lot of fun using the Lightning Network, spending it, using it. A lot of fun on Satoshi's Place.
With the Casa node.
Yeah, with the Casa node.
So the Casa node makes it easy. I think Pierre's launcher has gotten way easier to use if you just want to use your regular computer.
Yeah.
The team at Noddle sent us their node. We're going to test it out when I get back from Hong Kong, you get back from Miami. Give you guys a full walkthrough on that, so it's getting easier. And like I said, like the whole point of Layer 2 is that we can just go to town here. And, you know, if we fuck up, it doesn't fuck up Bitcoin. That's the whole point. So we just keep building and we see where it takes us. But this has been extremely impressive growth. The excitement around Lightning has beaten all of my expectations. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, completely. I didn't think it was going to happen this fast. Rain Dog Dance, shout out Rain Dog Dance on Twitter. He just posted a thread. He took a screenshot of the Lightning Network node topology like 6 hours into the network. I just retweeted it, so if you freaks go to my page, you'll find it. What was it? The oldest screenshot I have, 17th January 2018. So a year to the date. There was 19 nodes, 28 channels. Capacity was 11,302,000 Satoshis, or 0.113 Bitcoin. So that's a year ago.
I'm looking at it now.
The current state. So now there's 2,727 nodes. Though some sites are showing more than 5,000 nodes already. There's 20,443 channels, and capacity is at 52,273,000,000 Satoshis, or 522.73 BTC. So staggering growth over a year, from 19 channels to 2,727 channels, or some people are even saying more than 5,000. So incredible growth.
From 0.1 Bitcoin to 522 Bitcoin in a year.
Right.
Fucking badass.
Yeah. It's
And also, I think there's a caveat here, is that it doesn't, private channels aren't being recorded, and more channels are being private now. They default to private.
Yeah.
So you can't just look at that. The Lightning Network is growing at like breakneck speed, and the reason that's possible is because it's layer 2 instead of layer 1. So we can still be conservative on layer 1 and innovate on layer 2 faster than ever, which is pretty fucking awesome.
Does anything worry you about the speed of the growth? Like, what happens if we get a bunch of Bitcoin over there, a considerable amount, and it turns out to be a failure? Is there a scenario in which a bunch of that Bitcoin can get locked in those channels?
I mean, yeah, that's why it's still beta, right? Like, so you should don't that. It's like a catch 22, right? Like, use Lightning, like play around with it, but like, don't put a lot of money into it. You know, it's a hot wallet. Treat it like a hot wallet.
Yeah, exactly. So for you freaks out there, from my experience, I've only put, I've never had more than $200 on the Lightning Network. Very first world of me to say that's not a lot of money, but nothing, no crazy amount of Bitcoin.
Yeah, I mean, and fees are low right now, so like on-chain transactions are really cheap. So, you know, just play with it carefully.
Yeah.
I think, you know, maybe we'll have a bit of a PR crisis if it fails. But like, that's why I'm trying to preempt that just in case it happens, right? Like, you should, it won't be a complete failure. We'll learn from it and we'll continue.
This is true. Yeah, so it's still growing. Again, go out there, be reckless, but also be safe. Just be aware. Be aware, okay? It's the motto around here, freaks. How are you liking this remote recording? I feel a little weird.
It's so weird. I'm used to just like being in front of you and making faces at you while I drink my scotch.
Are you drinking scotch right now?
No, I really failed on my scotch acquisition, so I'm drinking a Heineken right now, and I'm just not really that happy about it. But I am. I've been drinking all day. I went to the second highest bar in the world on the 118th floor of this building in Hong Kong. It was pretty badass. So, I got it's flowing. It's flowing, but I don't have my drink of choice in front of me. And I don't have you. I don't have my person of choice in front of me. We're not even video chatting. We're doing voice chat because we're trying to get through the Chinese.
Yeah. We had some technical difficulties trying to set up the face to face video chat. Very suspicious. We had to do some hacking to make this episode happen. And yeah, it is a little awkward. That's why on this in Tales from the Crypt and Rabbit Hole recap, I think the personal connection of sitting across from somebody is important for the conversation. Not that this conversation's not enjoyable. Putin Bitcoin rumor. Is Russia going to buy all the Bitcoin, Matt?
I mean, Putin probably has Bitcoin. Like, I would be surprised if he didn't have Bitcoin, right? But you're not going to hear about it in the news. He's not going to tell the world he's buying Bitcoin. That'd be fucking stupid.
Right?
Do you have scotch over there? I thought my scotch just came. It didn't. Bitcoin is perfect for Russia, and this recent rumor is probably absolute bullshit. It seems like the source is like complete garbage.
Crazy psycho.
Yeah, absolute garbage. They're not buying the amount people are saying they're buying, but it makes complete sense for Russia. They're under sanctions. They have trouble moving their money. You know, the U.S. government keeps blocking them doing things, and Putin's fucking loaded. So I would be really surprised if he doesn't have any Bitcoin. And so then the question becomes, you know, do you let Putin acquire Bitcoin and not acquire Bitcoin yourself, right? Like the whole adapt or die narrative. These countries are going to, and these world leaders are going to need to make a decision. Are they going to be left behind, or are they going to actually jump into this thing?
Yeah, I think Michael Bitstein, or excuse me, Goldstein, I always say that, at Bitstein had a perfect tweet this week, and it was a play, I forget what movie it's from, but where the nuclear war breaks out and the screen says the only winning move is not to play. In Bitcoin, the only winning move is to play. So it's the complete opposite of that. That movie, and I thought that was a very short but sweet and descriptive statement on Bitcoin's incentive network. The only winning move is to play.
Yeah, it's game theory at its finest. Everyone's incentivized to jump in, otherwise they might get left behind. And you never know who has it. You know, we can speculate all day if Putin has it. He can prove if he has it, but you can never prove that he doesn't have it. So you end up in this thing where you don't want to be the last guy at the table to buy some.
Right. Yeah. So Putin's doing that in China, where you are right now. They are planning on using the Great Firewall to target nodes and miners as well. So this shows the importance of small blocks, we would argue. I didn't even hear this story. This is popping up on me right now. So the Great Firewall, how are they going to target nodes and miners?
You know, I mean, I imagine network analysis, deep packet analysis. This is MIT who released this, so it's not some fly-by-night blog. It's MIT's it's MIT's technology review. This is what we speculated for a long time. You know, they it seems like they want miners and node people to register with their government ID. Otherwise, they'll block it. And this is, you know, obviously that goes directly against the value prop of Bitcoin as a censorship resistant money. And this is why we need, this is the whole point of small blocks, keeping the chain as efficient as possible, because it's way easier to hide your connections if the bandwidth requirements are smaller. And also the redundant channels, right? So like stuff like Blockstream satellite network, they can't block a satellite downlink through their great firewall. And the only reason you can do that reasonably well is because of smaller blocks and an efficient chain.
Yeah. So that's an important reminder of why, and I think what we've been harping on more recently, and a lot of others as well, is that a lot of people focus too much on the data growth of the blockchain, like the full state, like how much data. But a bigger problem is definitely bandwidth, and that's a very misunderstood problem in Bitcoin, or misunderstood area of Bitcoin. Would you agree?
Yes. Everyone thinks it's storage. It's not fucking storage, guys. I've been saying this for fucking years. It's internet. It's hard and expensive. And, you know, like stuff like running your node through Tor. Like, Tor isn't that efficient. You can't run large bandwidth applications through Tor. But you can run Bitcoin through Tor because we've kept it as efficient as possible. And it's super underrated, and if you don't plan ahead, then it becomes very, very easy to block these things if they decide to, right? And you don't want to be asking for, you know,
you don't have to ask for forgiveness. Yeah,
you just want to be able to do it. You want to be able to route around them. Mm-hmm. So Bitcoin will be unaffected by this because of the decisions we've made over the last 3, 4, 5 years.
Well, I wouldn't go as far as saying it will be unaffected. The alternative ways of accessing and relaying transactions on the network aren't as mainstream and are a bit of a UX hurdle. Like, I don't think I'd be able to set up the satellite by myself right now and do that.
Yeah, but if a miner had to, you know, if it's amazing what people can do when they're forced to do it. So the key is that they could be able to do it if they need to. Yeah, I agree that it wouldn't be unaffected, right? But less affected, mm-hmm. I guess, would be a better way of putting it.
Yeah. Well, no, I guess it'll be a glaring case study in whether these Chinese miners in particular have the gall to sort of do this outside of the government's eyes and sort of go against the official Chinese government. That's potentially a possibility. The other possibility, other side of the coin, is this action by the Chinese government is enough to scare people away.
But that could be good too, right? Because it'll help distribute mining geographically. So they'll open, you know, mining will move to more locales because you know, regulations in China make it less profitable, less advantageous to mine there.
Yeah, but let's also play devil's advocate here. China could be producing the roadmap for how other countries could swiftly stifle Bitcoin adoption and proliferation.
I mean, I think you can't really effectively stop Bitcoin right now in your country unless you just shut down the whole internet. Just shut down all encrypted traffic. And, you know, encrypted traffic is super important in the internet, banks and everything. Like, people need to be able to use encryption. Otherwise, they have no security on the internet. I mean, it should be interesting to play out. But this is exactly why it's so important to prioritize the censorship resistance aspects, right? That's the whole value prop. The whole value prop is that government shouldn't be able to control this thing. That's got to be our main priority.
Yeah, and let's loop this back to the conversation in the beginning of this episode. Like, that is why we're so hard on these other projects and call out this bullshit, because if we earnestly want this stuff to succeed, like, that is not, like, these are obvious failures on the road to making these systems as robust and secure and decentralized as possible.
Exactly.
It's all, yeah, All the hate is out of love. I do not hate the people involved. Let's just make that clear. It's hate of hate's a strong word. I just disagree with the path chosen to attain what is essential for these protocols to succeed.
Like, let me put it this way. If the Chinese government wants to stop all unregistered Ethereum nodes in their country, they could do it right now. The bandwidth requirements are way too high. You just can't hide it. Mm-hmm. That's not going to happen. You know, you're not going to be able to hide it. And there's no going back. Once you're in that situation, it's very, very hard to try and pull it back and make it more efficient. You're already fucked.
Yeah.
Okay, let's switch to a happier topic.
Genesis trading volume, OTC, up 50% year on year. That's a fundamental.
Fantastic.
That's a fundamental low-key indicator that not a lot of people are paying attention to.
Yeah, that's pretty huge. I mean, that speaks for itself, right? 50% volume up, OTC. That's where the big guys are playing. Genesis is one of the major players in OTC in America, at least.
Mm-hmm.
The other positive news that I really like is Wasabi just implemented multi-denominations. So before, you know, you needed denominations of 0.1 Bitcoin. Now, if you have a larger amount, they do other denominations. It gives you a smaller anonymity set, but it does it, so it makes it way quicker. For large amounts, it's a very, very big upgrade that we've seen. The other big that's Wasabi Wallet, WasabiWallet.io. It's helping bring privacy to Bitcoin. Probably one of the easiest coin join implementations we've ever had. Definitely the easiest coin join implementation we've ever had. You can just any OS you can use it on, Mac, Linux, Windows. The other big thing is Thor by Bitrefill. Have you looked into this at all?
Yeah, it's pretty dope.
So you want to explain what it is?
I think you can do a better job of explaining it. But essentially, Bitrefill has set up a huge Lightning Network channel, hub, whatever, and they're allowing customers to use U.S. dollars to get access to the Lightning Network directly. Is that correct?
I'm not sure if you could use U.S. dollars, but I think the idea is that, like, me or you could onboard people directly onto Lightning.
Mm-hmm.
I guess presumably you could do something similar with U.S. dollars, but Bitrefill, I don't think, ever interacts with U.S. dollars.
Okay, yes, correct. Yeah.
So basically, like, the idea is, like, I pay them Bitcoin, and then my buddy scans the code he gets, and he just automatically has channel open, and he's on Lightning, and he never actually interacts on chain. He just automatically jumps right into the Lightning Network. It makes onboarding way, way easier.
And we're back.
I lost Marty again. Yeah, it makes onboarding way easier for the Lightning Network. So, that's a huge... Bitrefill just keeps killing it, man. They're, like, one of my favorite companies now.
Sorry, I lost you there. Can you repeat that last part?
I was just saying... I lost Marty for a second there. This remote thing is really killing me. But at least we're recording locally, so hopefully you'll hear us nice and well afterwards. I just think Bitrefill is, like, one of my favorite companies right now. They're just fucking killing it.
Yeah, no, true to the ethos, building dope products, putting their head down, getting shit done. So it's great to see. Thor's a really cool thing. Check it out if you get the chance. If you want to onboard somebody directly on the Lightning and be reckless in that fashion, Bitrefill has made that possible. So we're seeing innovation just pop up out of nowhere.
And, like, specifically, like, it works with mobile wallets really well. So, like, yes. So the person you onboard, they just need the app on their phone. They just scan the code, and they're in the Lightning Network. Bang, bang. They're there.
Yeah. Shout out John Carvalho, who led that initiative at BitRefill, I believe. I think he announced that he joined their team, and that was the first product that he rolled out with them.
Yeah, they're fucking badass. I'm just super impressed.
Yeah, at Bitcoin Aralog on Twitter, if you want to give him a follow. That's all the topics I have on the list, or I'm seeing at least. What do you want to riff on right now, dude? Are you tired? How late is it there now?
Did I lose you again?
I said that's all the topics we have today.
I lost you.
But what do you want to riff on as we end this episode?
This is so frustrating, Marty. So should we wrap this up because it's so frustrating?
Yeah.
We had backs got delayed. They're blaming the government shutdown. We've told you over and over again, don't hold your breath on this. We've been waiting for these kind of things forever. It'll come when it comes. Until then, we accumulate and get them before them. Can you hear me, Marty?
Yeah, back. Yeah, don't hold your breath for backed. It's
Marty.
I've been saying that.
What?
I can hear you, Matthew. I don't think you can hear me. But we're going to end this recording. Thanks, you freaks, for listening. Sorry if there was this was an awkward episode because we are remote. Shout out to you, freaks. Matt, any parting words? Can you hear me? He can't hear me. So we're going to end it here. Hopefully this wasn't too much of a shit show for you, freaks. But, hey, that's what you get here at Tales from the Crypt. Peace and love.
Can you hear me?